And we're back with an all-new episode of Keep It. Kara is back.
Bonjour.
You're changed.
I know. I'm in a beret. We already made these jokes before, didn't we? On the bicycle with the baguette. And no, right. I'm back. I just wish I was. No, I'm kidding. But I'm not.
It sounded like it was pretty great.
How was it, though, like, just being in Europe for a long time and missing certain things?
Guys, I didn't even... Michael Cohen, is that who it was? Mm-hmm. I saw that happening, and I was like, I don't care. I'm not in America. I'll figure this out later. There's been all of this shit with the WGA, the Writers Guild. We may have to... crazy shit. And I was like, you know what? I'm in Europe, and none of this counts.
That's right.
When you're in another country, the news doesn't happen. So I ate my baguette, and I drank my champagne and my rosé, and I went about my business.
So the come down hasn't happened yet, really.
I mean, it started. I'm back.
Yeah,
although,
right.
I will say, guys, in America, we take this for granted. A 24-hour drugstore is not something that they do a lot of other places.
It is not.
I was in Paris on Sunday trying to find a drugstore. And it's like 3 o'clock and truly everything was closed. The grocery store is closed like an hour later. I mean, I was like, what do you do if you wake up at 11:30 with a cold? You can't drive to CVS. You can't get some NyQuil. Like, what? You just deal with it. You just have to be sick.
Boring question. Is France a place where people walk down the street drinking things?
Well, like, in a lot of other countries outside of the United States, you can have open carry. So, like, yeah.
I meant just, like I went to Tokyo recently, and there's nobody is drinking coffee on the street.
Oh, I don't know. I mean...
I'm still mad at them. Guys, figure it out. Get your iced coffee in your hands and start walking with it.
They tend to do that. I feel like they do it less. I haven't seen people in London do it that much.
Yeah, no, like there's no garbage cans anywhere in London.
Well,
yeah.
In particular in Paris, like they're, you know, it's a, you know, they're like going to go to the cafe and have a coffee. So they don't need to like have it in their hands and stomp through the streets like us. They're like civilized,
right.
and consuming food the way you're supposed to consume.
No, it feels like they only drink things if they're going to sit around and discuss Simone de Beauvoir. It's like, they don't always have the time.
How is Starbucks going to sell ads? Well, you did get back a few days ago.
I did.
And one sad news thing that happened recently, mm-hmm. is Luke Perry died.
And he really should not have. That was terribly depressing.
Yeah. So Luke Perry, as we all know, well, I don't know if all of you know, from Beverly Hills 90210, who is listening to this who has never heard of it?
Beverly Hills 90210?
Yes. I mean, someone.
Probably. I see. And also, he's on Riverdale. I'm now looking at Kara.
Yes.
He played Archie's dad on Riverdale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I mean, for people slightly older than me, I feel like it was probably weird seeing Dylan go from teenager to dad, but I feel like I didn't start watching 90210 until Tiffany Amber Thiessen joined.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm
only human.
I missed the nostalgia for like the high school years.
Yeah,
but mm-hmm. I love the college years with everyone doing drugs.
This was interesting though, because I did not watch 90210. Mm-hmm. You know, I only got so far into Riverdale, but I was still very sad. It was similar, I guess, to when Mac Miller died, where every story you've heard about him has been positive. And obviously, when people die, those tend to be the stories that we talk about. Mm-hmm. But like, I was like, I have no real connection to him, and yet I felt very sad. And also, he was pretty young,
mm-hmm.
And it seemed completely out of nowhere. But yeah, it was like a real bummer.
No, like Heather Matarazzo and like Colin Hanks and other people shared stories of how, whether they were new to Hollywood or they were on a plane and interacted with him, and he was just nice to everyone.
Yeah.
And he always
had that distant bad boy energy, too, so there is something gratifying about him being cool in any way, honestly. You know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's also 2019, so if they hated a bitch, somebody would be out there with a piece in Slate. When we are back, we'll be talking about Michael Jackson and HBO and Oprah. We'll also be joined by a friend of mine, London-based singer Leo Callahan. We'll be right back. Well, this weekend, I think a lot of us saw it, the HBO documentary Finding Neverland. Kate Winslet.
She killed it.
Johnny Depp.
If only.
Yeah.
It was very dark having to see him.
Don't you wish just... This is the only scenario where I'm like, God, I wish it was Johnny Depp in a weird wig.
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of what it actually is.
In Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, he wasn't so far off from, like, latter-day MJ. At least You Are Not Alone era MJ.
Yeah, the white face, yes. The glasses. Anyway, we're talking actually about Leaving Neverland, the four-hour Michael Jackson documentary that aired on HBO. And, whew, that was grueling. It was a lot. You know, it told the stories of Wade Robson and James Safechuck, who revealed how Michael molested them as children. And they both give in-depth interviews. Their family members do. It really just sort of dives into the details of each incident. I think that's what was so striking about the documentary to me. You know, because we sort of know the cases. A lot of people I talked to actually did not really particularly remember when Wade came out.
The thing is, I don't think people really knew the cases. I think it really was a situation where we all collectively, because he wasn't convicted of everything, decided that we didn't have to pay attention to what was happening. And like, I think people generally knew, like, yes, we know that he was accused of this, but at trial he was found not guilty or whatever, you know. Mm-hmm. We know that he didn't go to jail for it. And so I, you know, in terms of the other accusers, I kind of knew, but I don't think that was something that most of us were super familiar with. You know, now there's been the push and the lead up to the film, but it felt like with this movie, this was the first time we all really had to, like, have our eyes kept open. And, like, you know, you've sort of heard whispers or whatever. You kind of know bits and pieces about this story. But now you actually have to pay attention to what the whole story is.
And also, like, it's centered actually on the victims, because inevitably any conversation casually you have about all of this moves towards figuring out why Michael Jackson is so weird. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It just becomes gossip anyway, you know, so it moves away from facts. And, you know, now seeing these two people in particular go step by step through basically the grooming process of how they became friends with Michael, how their families were groomed, it opens your mind. It just becomes way more real, frankly.
Yeah, I thought what was really interesting was, as a kid, obviously, who grew up seeing a lot of this, remembering things that are sort of stuck in my mind, but I didn't know the full story for. Like, I remember seeing that 1993 address he did on TV.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right.
When the allegations first hit, but I don't have memory of, obviously, watching it with the critical eye that I do now as a 32-year-old adult.
And by the way, he had a second one of those addresses too, right? In like 2005, he did another live to camera
thing. And watching it now, I'm just like, this is crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It really is. I mean, the thing with any of these instances, like, it's obviously the failing of this individual who was, like, depraved and all of that. But it really is on every level. It is a failing from everyone. Mm-hmm. Like, I think Harvey Weinstein was a failing from all of Hollywood. R. Kelly, that was an entire community, an entire city and industry that failed those girls. Michael Jackson is, like, kind of the whole fucking world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like the world let these kids down.
The world knew that he would talk in interviews about, like, the family, and no one disputes the fact that he slept in rooms with children. And I think what's interesting in the Oprah interview, she brings that up, you know, when she's talking about child abuse. It's every family member is like, he was nice to me, or we all know that he slept with children, or whatever. It's like, cool, you all know that that happened, but you also know that the door closed and the lights went out and you were not there.
Right. But it's interesting, though, because throughout the documentary, obviously it gets to that point, but like the mother of, I think, Wade Robson specifically would talk about how she became friends with Michael Jackson, too. And it wasn't like two encounters in, the door was shut in front of her face. It was like five or six. So it's just, there was never seismic shifts into, oh, now he's ensnared my kid. You know, it's like, it moved sort of slowly to that world. So you could see
the hotel's moving.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Particularly a story.
It was hard. It's hard, though, because, I mean, obviously this is also layered and complicated, and like, it's not the fault of anything. It's Michael Jackson's fault. Mm-hmm. But it is hard to, like, Wade telling the story of, like, when his family went to the Grand Canyon and he stayed at Neverland. And you're like, that is weird.
Yes.
And celebrity is weird, and celebrity is fucked up, and what it does to people, and what, you know, people who have been confronted with it, like, I get that it's hard to process that correctly, but it's just like, if Michael Jackson were not Michael Jackson, would you have left your kid with this person? And so it does speak to, like, the way that celebrity mm-hmm. gives things a pass, and it was hard to, like, not look at the parents with some,
like, a question mark. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not there. It's not on them, but it's just like, wow, so much of this is so sticky and, like, so uncomfortable.
Well, one of the darkest moments of after even hearing about all the abuse and everything, I think, was just the last line of it where he's like, does he blame his parents? And he's like, pauses. And then he says, I'm working on that.
Right. Hmm. Which is fair.
Yeah, I mean, and you look at photos and you see their lives were changed, you know? It's like, it's not like it was some snake oil salesman like Pirelli or something walking into town. It was Michael Jackson, the most famous person in the world. Oprah makes sure to mention, too, you know, that fame is much different now, you know?
Yeah.
It's not Shawn Mendes or Ariana Grande staying at your home where
yeah.
you might not even know one of their songs or something. Like, everyone knows Michael Jackson's songs. Everyone knows what he looks like. Everyone's watching him on TV. And when that man steps into your home, like, even the grandmother, when she's telling stories about it too, you know, she's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right. No, there was like there's an air of infallibility people ascribed to him just because he was not only so famous but also so seemingly welcoming.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, you're grateful that he's approaching you.
And he's been famous for so long, since he was a kid, so it makes you feel like you know him.
Right.
It's, I mean, I hope of the many things that come from this, because dear God, something has to. I think one of the things that I've been reading about a lot is people saying, like, a pedophile or an abuser doesn't look the way that you think they look. Like, a mm-hmm. monster does not, it's not, like, the way that every rapist is not a man in a trench coat grabbing a woman down an alley and raping her. Mm-hmm. It often looks like your uncle or your boss or, you know, regular people. And so sort of the face of, because that was so much of it with him, like, we couldn't believe it because it's Michael Jackson and he's famous and he's childlike and all of this bullshit. But it's just like, abusers and monsters don't necessarily look that way.
Mm-hmm. And it's usually someone you know, because most childhood abuse happens with, you know, an enigmatic family member or someone connected to the family.
Right. Also, I think it's just, there is something still mind-blowing from, like, a, like, casual pedestrian looking in vantage point of just how, in certain ways, Michael Jackson is just incredibly guileless. The fact that he would have Peter Pan as the emblem for his entire life is just so gross. You know, it's so gross to value a character who, above all else, is just a kid forever. I mean, it's just a weird thing to think as, you know, spiritual merit. I don't know.
No, and even the idea that there were so many rooms, you know, in that place.
Oh, yeah, the amount of places with beds. Yeah.
And uh-huh. it's just, that's the stuff where, you know, people talk about how crazy it sounds. The mom coming in, it's like, oh, you were in a secret room. I'm like, but we see them.
Yeah.
They're there. Yeah. What's interesting is I've also been reading some reports from people like Rolling Stone and Forbes who covered, like, the trial in 2009.
Yeah.
And in 94. And there was still this feeling from the media that those trials were circuses. You
yeah.
know? And it was, you can see it with the fans. With, I'd forgotten about fucking Dove Lady.
Of course, no, yes.
Yeah.
Icon.
It's like I was watching Second Act. her is just, you know, you, the first one, it's like, do you still believe all these people? Do you believe that it happened to every child? And for the famous people who say, no, it never happened to me, you're like, are they lying? You know? And then you start to think, you know, if Michael's an abuser, you can't think of him as this childlike person who stumbled into abuse. You have to think of him, this was methodical, and these rooms, yeah. mm-hmm. which makes it also seem like, well, then of course he becomes friends with Macaulay Culkin, because you can have one high-profile kid who's going to stay with you and nothing happens, and then for life, they're a person who can say in the media, didn't happen to me.
Mm-hmm. Something I've learned is there are a lot of people who forgive this or don't. Like, I've actually been shocked at how many people I've seen who say they don't believe them.
Right.
Like, it's still, like, watching the documentary, they've watched it, and they're like, I don't believe this. They, you know, they said at the other trial that he didn't molest them, and it's just, I know, because I know how we treat victims, and I know that it's hard for people to understand, like, if you're someone who's been abused, why you would lie about what's happened to you, and the idea that, like, they both talk about how both men, like, still have love for him, and how you could still love your abuser. I know that that's difficult and hard for people to understand if it's never happened to them, or if they haven't put effort into understanding what it is like for people who have been abused.
People but, online
but
doing
a
that
lot
whole,
of fucking people.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's
a lot. Lot of people like are
they're like
just,
he still loves him. They're like, look
or
at
just
how the
flat
parents
out
are
or just
talking
flat
about
out
him.
The number of people just are like, I don't believe this mm-hmm. is crazy.
And yeah. clinging to, like, as you said, there's like a Forbes article that just says, you know, Michael Jackson's one of the most investigated potential criminals ever,
right.
you know? So, like, they cling
and
to, like...
And it was written before they saw the documentary, by the way.
Right,
there's that
right.
caveat. It's like, I haven't seen it. I just want to let you know that we went through these trials and all of us still like him. You know? The amount of people I saw on my timeline saying, well, because we allegedly think Wade Robson broke up Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake, he's untrustworthy. It's like, oh, you can't get abused and then, like, have an affair? Also,
didn't you see that?
That's Britney's fault, too.
Did you see that tweet from Ebony? Like, Ebony is out here, like, they're trying to bring him down. I'm like, you all, everybody needs some help. Every last one of us, we need to collectively as a globe go into some sort of therapy and counseling, because what the fuck is wrong with
people?
Well,
of course Ebony thinks people are out for money from Michael Jackson because they ain't paid their fucking freelancer. People are out for money from them. Difference is people just want $235 for something they did. There's also, what does the family think? And you constantly think about, you know, Janet, who
has
I'm such
kept
a huge
her
fan
mouth
of.
Shut.
Shut. And what's interesting is I was reading an article from Newsweek, and it tried to a bunch of articles, I think, tried to position the fact that she said something in 2016, and it's not actually from 2016. I looked back at that clip from Michael Jackson Unmasked, that documentary, and I couldn't pinpoint the year. I tried to ask someone online, but it's clearly Janet in, like, the 90s, and I think circa the trial or right after it, where she says, of course I don't believe him. People are doing this for money, etc. And that's the last time we've heard Janet talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like after the 94 trial, I think everyone in America, especially his family, you know this man, you are ready to believe, yes, this was all a scam. This was for money. You know?
Right, right.
And what's weird is even people who do believe the victims, Wade and James, there's also people who just think that the person in the 94 trial was lying, that the dad was, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've learned that a lot of people do not care if you are abusing children. That has been the lesson here, as long as you sing and dance good.
Yeah.
The amount of people who invoke online, just that I've seen casually, of he brought joy to so many people. Like, are you brain damaged?
So does Iggy Azalea.
But that's the other thing. Like, his music is incredible. Mm-hmm. It's not now right. not incredible. And I think that's part of probably the disconnect here, where when you have these conversations, it's like Michael Jackson is the greatest performer of all time, the greatest pop star of all time. He is still that. He was also most likely a pedophile. And I think that saying, like, now the music is bad, I feel like I've said this like 100 times, but, like, the music is not now bad. The music is harder to listen to. Yeah. It's all harder to swallow. But the notion that, like, the legacy of the art is fully now gone is ridiculous. Like, Thriller is still incredible, and this other thing happened, and it maybe now changes the way we talk about Thriller. It probably changes the way we listen to it. But the idea of just, like, it's all been scrubbed clean because we've now talked about who this person really is asinine.
And it's definitive music. I mean, if you think of that era, like 1983 does not exist without Thriller. Just the way, quite the same situation, but for instance, like, Jerry Lee Lewis, who had, like, his own, like, married his cousin when she was 14 or whatever, the boogie-woogie piano of the 50s, that doesn't exist without him. You know what I mean?
So. Yeah, and the direct line of Wade Robson being abused by him and emulating him and then taking that choreography to Brittany and Justin and just sort of forming a base of what we saw and recreated in our homes. The whole line is just so messy and it's hard to watch. As I said, 1in6.org is a great resource if you're a male who's been sexually abused, either as an adult or as a child. So you should visit it if this conversation or the documentary was too hard for you to talk about with anyone. We'll be right back. And we're back, Karen Lewis, talk with my friend, London-based singer Leo Callahan.
Well, unfortunately, it's a sad day. It's happening. I guess you can say we're finally keeping up, as this is the second week that we're discussing what the hell is going on with the Kardashians.
This is a Herculean feat for me.
I mean, I wasn't here last week, but I feel the pain nevertheless.
Yeah.
Since we've last talked about this, Jordan Woods and Khloe Kardashian have gone public and have not been afraid to speak freely about the cheating scandal. Woods broke her silence. Love that phrase.
Oh, yeah.
Broke the silence. By sitting down with Jada Pinkett Smith on the Red Table Talk last Friday, sharing that she ended up at Tristan Thompson's house after a night with friends, and upon leaving the house in the early hours of the morning, Tristan kissed her. We'll get into why Tristan was having a house party with teens later. She's also fired back at rumors that she gave him a lap dance and requested everyone's phones be taken away, claiming neither of those stories are true. She admitted that there was alcohol involved and that she was not blackout drunk and that she shouldn't have been there in the first place. The biggest claim that Woods made, to which Khloe immediately fired back on Twitter, was that she was not the reason Khloe and Tristan aren't together. So to dive into this
news,
is that what we're calling it?
I mean, loosest definition we have, but news. Very well.
We have singer, musician, artist Leo Callahan.
Hello, how's it going?
All the way from London. You came here just for this, yeah?
I did. I flew in especially.
You heard we were talking Kardashians and thought, hey, I need to be here.
Listen, the Kardashians, it's like global news.
That's right, yeah.
So I have to say, I was not a Jordan Woods fan. To be honest, I didn't really know who Jordan Woods was.
I didn't know either.
Imagine really knowing.
Yeah. I might be a Jordan fan now.
Every step of that interview I thought was kind of
rad. That interview was flawless. From the beginning where she had Will Smith giving her that beautiful pep talk.
From the set of Bad Boys 3.
Right? And then she looked unbelievable.
Her hair looked amazing.
The
her
skin,
makeup
the
was
makeup.
Flawless.
She looked incredible.
The mascara. Yeah, the eyes were on.
And like the perfect, like the turtleneck dress. It was just perfect. Mm-hmm. And she was so calm during the interview. And it was really, you felt like, you know, like they explained at the top of the interview that Jordan Woods and her family have known the Smiths for years, that Jordan's dad was a sound engineer on The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And it really did feel like mom Jada was talking to her daughter, to her niece.
I don't think of Jada as somebody who can really break it down for us. And yet, it reminded me of, stop me if I have brought this talk show up on this show before. In the 90s, there used to be a talk show called Forgive or Forget, where people would come on the air and the host, who was at one point Robin Givens and then Mother Love, they would confess they had done something terrible. And then the talk show host would point to a door on the set and say, if your friend forgives you, he will appear behind the door.
Right.
And then they would go and answer it. Anyway, Jada to me was such a peacemaker and such a like capable MC. I was surprised this was the first time I'd ever watched Red Table Talk. And I sort of am now standing her as a kind of Oprah sincerity.
Red Table Talk is good.
Yeah, I've never seen Red Table Talk.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really great. And I think Jada Pinkett Smith has this kind of strict aunt-like vibe.
Yes.
Like you would never want to say anything wrong or misbehave in front of her. So like, she just has this thing where she's just completely bossy. And like, if you like lied to her, you'd be in a lot of trouble.
But then like very loving.
Yes.
Also, but that's it.
Yeah.
You know, like a loving aunt.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
So of course, because the Kardashians cannot keep their mouths shut, Khloe tweeted immediately after the interview saying, why are you lying at Jordan Woods? ?" If you're going to try and save yourself by going public, this is in all caps, instead of calling me privately to apologize first, back to lowercase, at least be, capitalize, honest, lowercase, about your story. Capitalize, BTW, you, capitalize, are the reason my family broke up.
She like Roy Lichtenstein with this pop art capitalization.
So my favorite thing about this was, do you know like the term ratioed, Leo?
No, I don't.
So basically on Twitter, someone tweets something, and so the ratio of responses, retweets, and likes.
Right.
And so basically you know you tweeted something stupid when the ratio of the responses is far greater than the retweets or the likes.
Because you're not being endorsed, you're just being questioned.
You're just being questioned,
Chloe got her ass ratioed with a swift and it was all of these people that were just like, your skank ass father of your child, boyfriend, whatever he is the reason your family broke up, especially since he cheated on you like a full year ago. Like, how long ago was that?
Yeah, exactly. He has a history of doing this,
right?
And she is this, Jordan being this 21-year-old who was put in this slightly compromising situation. And of course, like, I guess she's not free of blame, but the point is that, like, as someone older and more experienced, Tristan should be the one who holds responsibility or, like, is in control of the situation.
I think it was also, Chloe is, like, an adult woman.
Yeah.
And you're on Twitter yelling at a 21-year-old. Like, 21-year-olds, their brains are not done. This is not to excuse whatever she did, but, like, 21-year-olds are dumb.
Yeah.
Also, just when you're a Kardashian and one of the main three, I just think it's weird to yell at a random person. You know, it's like, you know what kind of power you wield, you know?
But so the responses were mostly people responding to her like, girl, basically just like, you're blaming the woman, you're blaming only one person for this when it was Tristan, who was the only person who made like a real promise to you, presumably. And it was interesting too, because it was a lot of black women who like came to Jordan's defense, I think because they're sick of this shit from the Kardashians, where we've seen them pile on conveniently onto women of color before. They did it with Blac Chyna, who kind of deserved it, but still isn't a much, you know, like the power dynamic is off. They did it to Amber Rose. Like, they've done this shit before, and you could, I feel like people were just like, no, we've had enough of this. And no one feels sympathetic for Chloe either.
I also want to say that in this interview, just watching Jordan talk to Jada Pinkett, it reminded me at points of Serial, the podcast, how detailed they got with where were your legs in relation to his? Like diagrams were being drawn. I was picturing like, oh, they were kind of touching at the bottom. Now I see. I literally wanted to, like a listener of Serial, drive to the scene myself and go to the Best Buy parking lot where Jordan started all this shit or whatever. You know, so it was actually, it wasn't just entertaining. It was like, there was almost journalism in it, is what I would say about it.
Yeah, it was just an interesting kind of dynamic when Jada was sort of like getting all the details out of Jordan. Like, I was sat there trying to figure out, is she telling the truth? Isn't she telling the truth? Like, it was just kind of unclear because her story was like really detailed at certain points. And then at other points, she was like, oh, I'm not really sure. There was alcohol involved and stuff. So it just kind of like makes the whole situation feel quite blurry. But what is ridiculous is the fact that this is happening on Twitter. Like, I mean, the fact that they're having this argument on Twitter for everybody to see, it's so juvenile. And it's so not the space for it. And you've got to ask yourself, like, if this has happened so many times before, you know, why are we kind of like watching it?
I also found myself not caring if Jordan was telling the truth or not. I was like, like, listen, the fact of the matter is, this is not the first time Tristan Thompson has cheated on you.
Right.
So for starters, that's not the reason your family has broken up. Second, she looked amazing.
Right.
And I was like, I don't like these girls. I don't like the Kardashians anyway. So I don't really care if she's telling the truth or not. And it's like, had she... Also, hello, do we not remember when Kylie started dating Kim Kardashian's best friend's boyfriend?
Right.
So when Blac Chyna was with Tyga and they had a child, and at the time Kim and Blac Chyna were very close friends, and Kylie started dating him, I'm like, this is literally the same shit. So the fact that any of these people are on any sort of high horse about, like, because Chloe later sort of apologized and was like, I shouldn't have blamed Jordan, it's just Tristan's fault, but, you know, I was upset that someone close to me hurt me. It's like, girl, were you hurt for Blac Chyna?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know what else I want from this story other than for it to be done and for Jordan to maybe get a TV gig.
I saw a really great tweet where someone thought she should get like a Fenty beauty deal.
Oh,
and
sure.
I was like,
ooh, that would be good.
Because then you've got Rihanna who, like, I've never seen her interact with the Kardashians, so I have a feeling she doesn't really fuck with them.
You know what? That's true. I've never seen an interaction happening between Rihanna and the Kardashians. Do you think that that's just a situation that doesn't...
I think Rihanna's just like cool and they're not. You know, like, right. She's just, like, chill and cool and, like, has work to do.
I guess she's effortless.
Yeah. You know? I've never seen any real interaction with them, so I'm just going to assume Rihanna doesn't fuck with them. Jordan gets her Fenty Beauty deal.
Jada, the talk circuit? What do we think?
I mean, Red Table Talk I think
sensation?
This is the second season, or there's more episodes, so...
Jada could be, like, the heir to the Oprah throne, actually.
I mean, this is, like, if I become famous and I kiss my friend's boyfriend, I'm going to Red Table Talk.
Right.
To talk about it, because she was
I think if you ask politely, you're there.
I mean, because it was both, like, it was just such a good forum for it, and I think also talking to someone as famous as her, as opposed to, like, obviously Oprah now is Oprah, but when you're talking to these other daytime, you know, like, talk show hosts, they're not mega celebrities. Mm-hmm. Where when you're talking to Jada Pinkett Smith, she is, like, top of the echelon, A-list of A-list. And, like, there's something to that worked for me with the interview.
Also, there was something about, at the beginning of the interview, Jada says something along the lines of, and we've all been, like, a mess before. And that's something Oprah would never say.
Yeah.
And I actually believed it coming from Jada. I was like, wow, she's seen some things. Okay.
Yeah.
To quote Tiffany Haddish, you're from Baltimore, bitch.
It's from Baltimore. Leo, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. As an artist, how do you feel about people... like the Kardashians taking up all of this space in the pop culture narrative when, you know, someone like you, you're creating things.
Okay, so here's the thing. When the Kardashians first, like, started becoming a thing, I was very like, why is this happening? Why? Like, why the Kardashians? They haven't done anything. Blah, 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 blah. But the reality is that in this world of social media and Instagram and Twitter and basically, like, superficial consumption and, like, very short attention span and all that kind of stuff, the Kardashians have, like, cracked that, the sort of the way of manipulating that.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a talent in that because not everybody can do it. Do you know what I mean? So initially I thought, okay, whatever, you guys, I'm just going to dismiss you because you don't have any real talent.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually do think they have a lot of talent and skill. They've got an ability to hold people's attention. I mean, this being a case in point.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? This is actually just proves the point that they are able to entertain people with their lives or whatever, how real it is or how fake it is. I mean, who knows? I mean, we live in a world of fake news now, so everything is fake.
Yeah.
Everything can be questioned. So I didn't like them, but I actually do kind of like them now because I think that they represent this new way of consuming entertainment and this new way of, like, us interacting with each other in this kind of Instagram, instant Twitter way, and for better or for worse.
Yeah. How popular are they in the UK?
Extremely popular.
Still, yeah.
Like, yeah, no, you can't get away from them. The Kardashians are a global phenomenon. They are everywhere. Like, they are in the Middle East.
Yeah.
They are in Asia. They're in England. They're all over Europe. People know about the Kardashians everywhere because also they've, like, create, you know, Kim and Kylie have created this kind of, like, beauty empire as well. And they've almost redefined, in a way, what that whole 90s beauty thing, which was, like, the whole skinny Kate Moss thing. They've, like, taken that and, like, flipped it.
Well, they didn't. Well, they've gotten credit for something that mostly women of color had been doing for decades.
Of course. That was my next point. Yeah. That they've kind of, like, gone almost, like, it's almost like a pan-racialness. You know what I mean? Where they're taking different bits of, like, different races and putting them together in this kind of zombie way. And I'm not trying to say this is a good thing, by the way. I can see your face. Your face is like, But, like, I'm not trying to say this is a good thing. I'm just trying to say that, like, this is what they've made mainstream.
Yeah.
And, of course, there's a lot of privilege that comes with that because they are taking a lot of features that are traditionally from women of color.
Yeah.
And they are mainstreaming those things. But, like...
You know who the winner in all this is Kanye, because we haven't been talking about his
That's
ass.
That's true. I would say last week we ended up bringing up Kim for a second, and I thought we were going to get away with not having to do that. I felt bad.
Were you a Kanye fan?
Am I a Kanye fan? Yeah. I love his music. Yeah. I think he's so talented. I think he's a little bit you know,
because you dip into like hip hop as like an influence in your
course,
music.
Yeah, of course, massively. Yeah, massively. So I think he's phenomenally talented. I think he's a great musician. I think his music has been awesome, and even now his music still pushes boundaries and things. Obviously, like his political allegiances are kind of questionable.
That is very British.
That's a British.
You were just more diplomatic than he ever was.
It's fucked up. So his political sort of alliances and allegiances are kind of questionable, and more than questionable. And you know, just the way that he does things is also slightly crazy.
In general, are you excited by popular pop music right now? Like, are you into what is on the radio?
No. I'm really not. I have to admit, I'm not into what's on the radio. There's a couple of artists that I like.
Who do you like?
I really love Billie Eilish.
Okay.
That name is suddenly everywhere. I'm going to have to learn this person.
See, I have been listening to her for the past sort of year and a half or so. And I mean, I'm a big fan of dreamy, ambient, R&B, cinematic kind of like transportive music. Like, I love Sade.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
You know, mm-hmm. and I love
Lovers
like,
Rock, please.
I mean, yeah, exactly. That whole album. And then, you know, I love George Michael from the older period.
I love that album.
That whole album is like a big influence on me. I love Lana Del Rey, for example. I think she's great too. There's Frank Ocean, Solange.
Do you like the new Solange album?
I haven't actually heard the new Solange album yet. I just started watching the visual and I was like, wait, I need to actually sit down and watch 45 minutes. I need to give myself a moment for this.
Where do you then hope pop culture or like pop music is going to go?
I hope it's going to go to a more diverse place again. And mm-hmm. by diverse, I mean not just ethnically diverse, because obviously there is lots of diversity in American music, but there's actually not that much like ethnic diversity in British music. And if you mm-hmm. actually think, I mean, I'm South Asian. Mm-hmm. My family's like Pakistani and Indian. And if you think about like the complete lack of representation of brown people, mm-hmm. South Asian people within music, mm-hmm. Western music anywhere, even though a lot of music sort of samples Indian sounds. Like, if you think of like, I don't know, lots of stuff that Timbaland's are like Missy Elliott's getting a freak on, or
every once in a while a Tabla comes out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Selena Gomez, and which one is that? If You Want It, Come and Get It. Is that
Come
the
and
one
Get It? Yeah,
yeah. You know,
that's right.
Guys, I fully like didn't even recognize that she had a pop career. legit. Like, I was like, oh, she was on Wizards of Waverly Place and dated Justin Bieber. And my friend was like, Kara, she's like a massive pop star.
She's like a huge pop star.
And I like didn't know.
Her voice could kind of belong to anybody. I almost am sympathetic.
She's one of those people where when I hear the song, I'm like, oh yeah.
Yeah, Love You Like a Love Song.
That's you, but I don't, you know.
I mean, it's not her like specialized forte, like
her artistry.
I mean, it's not her artistry. It's something that she does. I get the feeling that Selena Gomez isn't like deeply passionate about music.
Yeah.
I think it's just something that she does, and that's not a bad thing. She's an all-round entertainer. She started off as an actress.
I mean,
pop music right now is in a kind of a strange place. I mean, It's just not as interesting as it used to be. It's mm-hmm. not as diverse sonically as it used to be. Mm-hmm. I kind of like love that whole late 90s, early noughties period where there was lots mm-hmm. of different kinds of sounds and lots of different kinds of music, and everything was doing really well. But with this sort of rise of streaming and piracy, like, there's only certain kinds of music that connect commercially, and therefore people are kind of creating music to fit onto playlists, as opposed to creating music to kind of grow as an artist. And that's why I like Billie Eilish, is because she's doing something quite different to what we've seen, and it's sort of taking what Lana Del Rey did and like taking it in a different direction, but that's why I like her.
What's next for you musically?
I have another song coming out in about a month and a half, mm-hmm. and I've got an EP coming out in May, June time. So I just released a single about a month and a half ago called Trevi Fountain, so check that out on Spotify, iTunes, all the usual places.
One of the fancier fountains, I have to say. If I had to rank all the fountains in the world,
I mean, Yeah, exactly. I picked the top one.
That's right. Yeah. Ambition. Jesus.
Well, Leo, thank you for being here. I think, did we get to the bottom of the Kardashians?
Did we solve them?
I mean, is there a way of getting to the bottom? I don't
know. My final hope is I hope Jordan gets a beauty contract.
Yep.
I hope that she finds a place to live because she'd been living in Kylie's guest house and presumably is homeless. I hope Khloé finds a man who doesn't willfully cheat on her.
And inner peace. I really hope she finds inner peace.
I don't care about that. But a tip to her, it might help if you start with a man who didn't cheat on his current girlfriend with you.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't also 8 months pregnant.
The more you know.
With you.
The more you know.
That might be a hot start to finding a faithful man.
Yeah. That's actually like the worst place to start, right?
Truly.
I mean,
truly.
You kind of can't blame the situation for being what it is when it started there.
That's correct. And we will be right back.
Whew. Hey guys, I hope that interview was great. Up next, we're going to talk about Steven Spielberg. How many of you knew that Steven Spielberg was a producer of Green Book?
I did not know.
Was he a producer or he was just a big fan of it?
No, he got it distribution, and also Amblin was a producer.
Mm.
When he said he saw it 5 times, my question, does he not know that life is too short? Come on.
Technically, Peter Farrelly said that in an interview when he said that that fell through at Focus and he reached out to Steven Spielberg as Spielberg was like, I've watched it 5 times in 2 weeks, and then he got it distribution. But still, 5 fucking times.
He does love movies about dudes who become better people. Outside of The Color Purple, Steven Spielberg does not like making movies about women.
Also, while we're on the topic of Steven Spielberg and black people, give us back the rights to MLK's speech.
I don't know about this.
He owns the rights to Martin. Like,
I Have a Dream.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's why when you watch Selma, Ava DuVernay, they had to write new speeches for Martin Luther King because they don't have the rights to one that he used. And he's been sitting on them because he thinks that somebody wants an MLK movie from him.
Mm.
And we don't.
Give us that shit back.
Give it to a black person. We don't want you. Thank you for The Color Purple. Thank you. That's it. You're done. We don't want you making any goddamn more movies. Certainly not about Martin Luther King Jr. And frankly, with black people and black history, you might want to fall back.
No thank you to Red Tails as well.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, was that George Lucas?
No, that was George Lucas. Him, but yeah. George Lucas is married to a black woman, so it's
yes.
fine.
He makes a bunch of bad
Why
movies.
Why are we talking about Steven Spielberg, Ira?
We are talking about Steven Spielberg because this Green Book-loving person, imagine it, he is after Netflix.
That's right.
In the wake of Roma winning several Oscars, he is big mad. He is an Academy member, and he is a chair of the Academy, and he is planning to propose a rule that would deem Netflix films ineligible for Oscars at the next Academy Board of Governors meeting.
Because they need, it would require that every feature film has a 4-week theatrical mm-hmm. run before it could be eligible for an Academy Award.
Yes, mm-hmm. and he's even kind of testy about what Manchester by the Sea did or Roma did, where they're in theaters for a second, and that's...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he doesn't want any of that, and...
Does Steven Spielberg know how much it costs to go to a movie?
$1 million.
Steven Spielberg, it cost, for like a family of four, that's like $150. Just you go to your tickets, the parking, somebody wants some popcorn, a soda. Like, that's a lot of goddamn money as opposed to a Netflix subscription, which is, what is it now? $12, $15?
Right, yeah.
They keep sneaking that price up on us.
Keep getting emails where they're like, just so you know, your Netflix price has gone up.
Yeah.
I spent $19 on a ticket to see fucking Greta.
Me too. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is
my fantastic. Keep it.
Is it?
Yeah. We'll get there.
Your mother had to die so that we could be together. We'll talk about it. Steven, I just don't get it. I don't get this attitude from people who feel this way about streaming. I mean, I guess I sort of do because, as we were saying, you know, Steven Spielberg loves movies with a white male protagonist who's coming of age.
Yes.
And those aren't the kind of movies that people in streaming are sort of reaching out for, you know? We're getting to see more diverse voices make films because, you know, it's just like you give them some money from Netflix or you buy their film and it's given to an audience that wouldn't normally be able to see those films.
Right. No, Ava DuVernay talking about how her movie 13th has the by far the widest exposure of everything she's made because it was on Netflix is super relevant. I think Steven Spielberg just frankly isn't considering how many people don't get to see movies the way he thinks people should see movies.
That is part of it. It's like everyone should have the theatrical experience. And it's like, listen, if it's Avatar, maybe, but like, maybe you don't care. Like, I don't need to see a rom-com on the big screen.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'd actually rather see that on my couch. But it is this very like old school, old man, like, movies are, you go to the theater, you know, and like, that's the magic of cinema, like that kind of shit. And it's just like, hey man, there's like a whole bunch of people that are way younger than you and they don't want to do that shit.
And as someone who was such an innovator in the film genre in the 70s and, you know, just the way we use technology in films, it's just sort of crazy that there are people who are now on that forefront. Let them do that. You were changing the game back when. Still make your game. No one's going to take your movies out of the theater.
Yeah.
It also seems like a strange moment to be obsessed with this after Roma did so well at the... I mean, guys, Roma was so much better than everything that came out this year. Whatever Netflix had to do to get it out everywhere, thank the fucking Lord, because it was so much better than almost everything that came out this year, I thought.
I think the other thing is people were positioning this as like, you know, Netflix versus Steven Spielberg, and I saw people that were very obnoxiously like, oh, you're standing up for Netflix? Like, it isn't a corporation that's just out to make money, and they, you know, they want to do this because they want to win Oscars. But it's not just about Netflix, because in the near future, I have to assume that it's not going to be the only streaming service making feature films. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just about Netflix getting their Oscars, which is clearly what Netflix is trying to do, which fine. Mm-hmm. But it's like there are many other streaming services. There will be more streaming services. And that means that there are more platforms for people who traditionally don't get to make movies to have space to make films. And that's really what it is. And I think it's really disingenuous for people to just like be like, oh, you're defending Netflix. It's like, no, we're just saying, you know, it would be nice to have more options. And the thing is, it doesn't behoove the people that are complaining to have more options. It's usually you're probably like your movie is not going to get made anymore. It's maybe now going to be an Asian woman gets her movie made by Netflix instead of whatever the fuck you were doing. So I think that I found that argument like particularly obnoxious from people.
Also just the need for a paradigm shift in terms of movies made by different people gaining more exposure has reached a fever pitch. So we need to lean into that.
Yeah.
And by that, and so it's like to resist Netflix feels very strange at this point.
It's like going to a movie, ugh, again, like that's a lot of work. I live walking distance from the Grove. And let me tell you, it takes a lot for me to walk my ass to actually go to a movie theater.
Takes
a lot.
Well, you have to go past that really crowded Zara too.
I probably am going to go into the Zara and then I'm going to buy something. And then it's like, now this day has cost me $70. It was the movie ticket was just 50, you know.
You know, I went to see Happy Death Day at AMC and that was enjoyable. And I think maybe the problem is you just stop seeing movies inside malls in LA.
Oh, yeah.
Just go to the actual theater. Just have a theater that is freestanding.
I hope they lose their vote.
When we're back, keep it. And we're back with the best segment of every episode, obviously, is Keep It.
Which is also the name of the show.
Yeah. Well,
branding.
Yeah. Lewis, what is your keep it?
I regret to inform everyone that I'm saying keep it to the movie Greta, which has already been brought up this episode. Now, it's a horror movie about Isabelle Huppert finding Chloe Grace Moretz interesting. And I don't know why she signed on. But here's the thing. So it's a movie about this girl, Chloe Grace Moretz, who finds a bag on a subway and then goes to return it to this woman who seems nice at first, and then she discovers quickly that this is all part of an ensnaring process that Isabelle Huppert has lined up. Isabelle Huppert is unbelievable and gets to just be a psycho. However, we find out she's a psycho way too early, and I feel like she doesn't do enough crazy shit for me. She, like, imprisons her, and then, like...
She's ordering wine, though, in very interesting ways. She's,
yes. I wish it were, like, a little bit more hilarious.
Spitting gum into people's hair.
Like, you just didn't like this movie.
Yeah. You know how the movie Obsessed has enough where you're like, not only is it thrilling, but, like, you get, like, a oh-shit laugh every once in a while? I don't feel like you get that in Greta.
You just, like, have people been really into it, and you think it's not as... It doesn't deserve
I think it should be the thing I am number one one into,
oh,
and I'm not.
Oh, and you're not. Got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, because it's very bad, but a lot of people are enjoying, like, I'm enjoying how bad it was because I was laughing at it.
Is it like Day After Tomorrow, Bird Box bad?
No. It is. No. It is, it is incompetent filmmaking.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
Is, this is too long. It is. What is happening in these scenes? How do you kidnap someone, still use their phone to contact people, and the police haven't found you by find your iPhone?
The involvement of the police makes no sense.
My hot take on this is that every movie made in the last 60 years has been 20 to 30 minutes too long.
And this is only 90 minutes.
Every movie is too long.
She's also just the cliche of a stalker, like standing outside frozen, looking in a
window. Standing outside the restaurant for an entire day cracked me up. And also her coworker was like, oh, is that your stalker? Good luck.
Have you guys just fully spoiled this movie for people?
The trailer does.
The trailer tells you absolutely everything.
Which is, to circumvent Kara, because it's exactly that, my keep it is two trailers that are revealing everything.
Still.
I saw Happy Death Day to you, and they showed the trailer for this movie, Greta. They showed the trailer for The Intruder. They showed the trailer for Ma.
Did you see the Spider-Man Into the Universe?
Yeah.
The trailer about the dog. It's like A Dog's Way Home, and at the end of the trailer, you see the dog come home to its original owner, and there was this kid behind me, he goes, so that was the movie.
Yes. Ma, that movie, like everything except for Us, I feel like, which you have no idea what the fuck's going to happen in that movie. But so many movies are just showing you, this is what's happening in the movie. Here's 5 minutes that just recaps the whole movie for you. Now go spend money on it.
Ma better be the Greta of my dreams. That's all I'm saying. Octavia's bringing it.
Do you think maybe they have twists we don't know about, and that's... What?
I don't know. I mean, there's usually something ludicrous that happens in these films, which shows you why they're not films being released later in the year.
And that's also, by the way, the problem with these trailers. You assume, oh, there must be a twist I don't know, since it seems like they gave so much away. And then it's like, no, you didn't?
Oh, they just told you the movie.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway, stop doing that.
Yeah, Jesus.
That's why people are going to the movie, Steven Spielberg. I know what happened. In Lincoln, I know he gets shot. The trailer showed me. Kara, what is your keep it?
My keep it. So, I don't know if you guys saw, because it's been hard to avoid. Pete Davidson and Kate Beckinsale have just been like making out around New York.
Oh,
and
mon dieu.
My keep it is to Pete Davidson now being a celebrity that we care about. Because it was, I remember when he and Ariana first started dating and you were like, okay, she's dating that bug-eyed boy from SNL. And you kind of cared. You mostly cared because she was doing something. Mm-hmm. And as soon as that was over, I was like, great. He can go back to his normal life, which frankly, it seems like he wants. He does not seem to handle this attention super well. And like, it seems like he does want to just like do SNL and be kind of chill. But now we have paparazzi with him tonguing down Kate Beckinsale. Is that who it was?
Yeah.
Someone I couldn't remember. I was like, the last thing I remember her in was Serendipity.
But here's the
was
thing.
Was that her?
One of my favorite comedians is Kate Beckinsale. Love and Friendship, she is hilarious. Last Days of Disco, she is hilarious.
She was hilarious wandering into my New Year's Eve party for 20 minutes and then wandering out.
Oh my God, are you Andy Cohen?
Oh my God.
I am.
The lowest rent.
Well, tell her to make out with him in private, because I just don't. He's not that famous. He's on SNL, which we all just watch the clips of the next day anyway, other than Donald Trump, who's the only person watching SNL live anymore. I just don't.
I said the second keep it here.
He's not
coming for SNL.
No, I mean, I'm just like, I don't care about him. He is not. Just let him go.
Yeah, he's some 23-year-old who dresses like a kid in detention. I mean, he's just done.
What's funny is it seems to, like, people are like, do it, girl, Kate. You know, like, you got a show coming out. Make out with Pete Davidson to get your attention. And I'm like, I think maybe she recognizes that this can, you know.
I mean,
we're talking about
listen,
Kate Beckinsale now.
I hope it works.
Did you love the stills of Antony next to them at that game?
Yeah.
The look on his face is just like, should I tell them to put peas in their mac and cheese?
There's him, and then there's like the black guy to the other side of Pete, and the two of them are both just like, have a lot of regrets.
Imagine feeling sympathy for Antony. That's what I'm most upset about.
Do you think they were at the game together?
He must be friends with Kate Beckinsale. Kate Beckinsale knows a bunch. He knows a bunch of gay guys.
You bring your friend to a hockey game, and then you just make out with your boyfriend while your guest is next to you.
What is this? Pen 15?
Haven't seen it yet. I've got to see it.
Well, you know what's crazy is that one of the teenagers, she wants something dry to drink, and she says, something French, like a Chablis.
And that's what you took from the show?
I'm doing Greta.
Oh, okay. Oh, got it.
That's our show. Go see Greta. They're not even paying me. We'll see you next time.